The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Tariq Fadhel and CFO Ian Flaherty of Fadhel Partners, a leading brand compliance, rights, and royalty management software developer. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's strong and in-line full-year results, with sales increasing 10% like-for-like to $14.5 million. But before we sort of go through the financials there, Tariq, I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of what the company does and the sort of key secular growth drivers behind the market, perhaps illustrating with a quick example.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. So the company is very much focused and has always been focused on helping enterprise customers navigate the licensing of their content, their intellectual property, in any form that may take. And so we work with both companies that actually will license out their character properties, their content, it's their talent, etc., and also with what we call the licensees on the other side of that equation, who license in that IP or that content, and then have to also be very cognizant of all of the usage rights that come along with that license, where, when, and how they can actually monetize that IP and use it. And then if they owe any financial consideration, what's called a royalty payment out of that equation, some very sophisticated and complex business rules that go along with it. Our software is able to also not only handle the rights and the contractual components of the licensing, but also the royalty calculations and billing side, which is also quite complex.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing the royalty, when it comes to sort of digitization, we've got, you know, lots of sort of like videos and audios and picture images all over social media at the moment. Can you just talk through what the current demand picture is like within that suite of projects? So you've obviously got the core sort of brand management or the IP management, but then you've also got that the brand content and the brand vision and making sure you get compliance of relevant IP around the social media.
Yeah, so as you said, we have two main product offerings. One is the what we call the intellectual property management suite, IPM suite, that really is a licensing system deployment for either a licensor or a licensee that effectively helps them manage the licensing agreements, the rights, and the royalties. And we're seeing quite a bit of demand in that space in two particular areas over the last 12 months coming into this year. One is in publishing, and in particular educational publishing, where there's a lot of digitization, as you referenced, in the form of digitizing content, creating and licensing character license libraries for students and professors, and effectively having to deal with the complexity of a subscription economy now. So if you're a traditional publisher in the old days, you used to sell a textbook. Now you have to sell a library of content that, you know, students are subscribing to, and they're paying you on a monthly basis as opposed to an upfront payment for a book. And you realize that, you know, your systems effectively need to be overhauled to be able to cope with those types of business models. And with a lot more of the data that's coming in, because you're now having to process a lot more data on a monthly basis to determine what your sales are and what you owe to your authors, for instance. So yeah, That's on the education publishing side. We're also working quite a bit with licensees, and these are consumer products licensees. There's thousands of them worldwide who will license from the likes of a Disney or a Warner Brothers or Hasbro, etc. And several of those large licensors are our customers as well. And they have one consistent pain point and problem, which is it's really complex to manage all of the terms that go into the royalty payment, and to be able to do that in an automated fashion that allows them to pay out accurately so that they don't overpay or underpay their licensors. And there's always a concern of a licensor audit. And so a licensor audit could be costly, lengthy in time, takes up a lot of the licensee's resources. And so we've introduced a solution offering, which effectively is just a pre-configuration of our core IP management product portfolio. Not a new product, just a pre-configuration of it in a SaaS cloud basis that allows these licensees to easily upload their licensing agreements and their sales usages on a monthly basis. And we do all the rest in terms of calculating what they owe to whom, generating their statements in a compliant way that the licensor would accept. And what that does is it gives them an accurate way of calculating the payments, but also being able to respond to any audits very effectively. Mm. And that's a new product offering we have called the Licensee that we released in early March.
Good. So effectively, I mean, it not only saves licensors and licensees a lot of money, reduces complexity, but it also can generate, you know, sort of revenues as well, as have been, you know, the new digitization, it enables them to actually generate revenues. I'm guessing that must mean then the recurring revenue, not the recurring revenue, the retention rates for clients must be pretty good, I would have thought.
Yeah. So retention rates in this side of the business are very good, because once you actually go through the process of putting in a system of this sort, you know, it's really a combination of a rights management and a financial system, if you will, of sorts. Mm. And so as long as the system is working correctly and the vendor Fidel is, you know, servicing your needs, you know, the churn rate is very low in that sense.
Yeah. I did see in the statement, you've got a sort of like a client list that most people would die for. Can you just talk about some of the logo names that you're able to mention just as clients, so they know who you work with?
Sure. So just before I do that, also the brand vision set of products, which is sort of that sits adjacent to the IP management suite. At its core also does rights management and copyright compliance. But we look at the world in that product portfolio from a marketer's perspective. And so we brought all of our licensing and rights management knowledge to the marketing side of the world and introduced the rights management and a new content and video tracking solution that allows marketers to manage the licenses and the rights that they're gaining for their marketing content, photography rights, talent rights, placement rights, et cetera, so that they can, you know, use that marketing content in marketing campaigns on digital, on social, in print, on billboards, et cetera. And they know that they have the rights for it, but then also we help them police it. And so we've introduced a new product offering that does both image and video policing, if you will, of that marketing content on e-retail sites, their own websites, their partner websites, and the very big one is on all social media sites. And so you can, you know, basically as a marketer, rest at ease that someone's looking out for you and ensuring that your marketing content is compliant. And so the reason why I brought this up is because we actually did quite a bit of, you know, net new logo acquisitions last year to this year with some very large brands, including PepsiCo, Philip Morris, Kimberly-Clark, Procter & Gamble. So these are accounts where they have a need to, A, understand what content they have that they're using for marketing across all of their brands globally. You think of these companies, they own 30, 40, 50 brands, and they operate in over 100 countries each. And so that content that they're producing on a central, you know, location has to make it out to multiple brands, multiple regions around the world that then gets modified. And so what we're doing is we're helping them, one, understand how they can exploit the content that they've already paid to produce, but then also when it's getting modified locally in country, and then posted on social media and on websites to ensure that even that modified content stays compliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when they put their proper sort of regulated sort of content out, I mean, it's almost, if you haven't got that software, it's impossible to know whether somebody's a bad actor using it, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, we have, I mean, we have an existing prospect that we're working with.
Yeah.
that effectively is now settling a lawsuit by a very large name with actress for worth 4 million euros.
Wow.
For copyright infringement on brands. So those are the types of conversations we're having with our blue chip customers all the time.
Brilliant. Okay, well, you've got some great demand there. Now, just turning to yourself, Ian, in terms of the numbers, can you just quickly run through sort of the highlights? Because I did notice the ARR accelerated significantly last year to 31%. So you had an overall revenue growth of 10% like-for-like, double digit, but a 31% jump in ARR. And obviously that is got higher margins, better revenue visibility going forward. Anyway, can you take us through sort of the key numbers?
Sure, yeah. As you mentioned, our gross revenue grew 10% to 14.5 million in 2023. That's despite relatively strong macroeconomic headwinds. More promisingly, even the split of our revenue showed very encouraging trends, growing 31% year over year to 11.4 million. Largely that is driven by a pivot in our business model to reoccurring software license revenue, expansion of customer headcounts, some major client wins that, Tower Control will talk through in a bit. Also, we saw really exceptional growth from our existing client base on the IPM platform. So land and expand strategy, adding new modules, growing our support revenue, and really ingraining ourselves with our clients. Mm. One headwind we faced during 2023 was a reduction in our services revenue from 4.5 million down to 3.1 million. This decrease is really a reflection of the successful completion of a number of IPM suite implementations in early 2023. And then delays of some projects that we had planned for late 2023. But we're seeing really promising signs so far in 2024, and we're expecting that IPM suite services revenue to return back to that approximately $4 million rate in 2024.
Yeah, but I guess it also, with the extra, sort of ARR boost, it means that your gross margins are ticking up, I imagine, as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, very good point. So gross margins increased to 62% from 60% the prior year. We think that's just the beginning of our profit margin expansion. We see that number going to between the 65 and 70% range for 2024, and really just see that continuing to grow. Two pieces driving that margin increase. The first, as I mentioned, services margin decreased quite a bit in 2023 due to the fact that we maintain a relatively high fixed cost base standing ready to serve these clients when the implementation services are needed. So as we begin to pick up with the services revenue in 2024, we expect that services margin to get back into that 30% plus range. Mm-hmm. Overall in the business, we're really highly focused on the expansion of our SaaS product offerings. Specifically, recently, we've recently released a licensee product. We've expanded new modules and a brand vision, as Tarek mentioned. Going forward, long-term, we see 80 to 90% margins on those SaaS offerings as we add new clients. So, long-term, we're hopeful to get, as I mentioned, 65 to 70% during 24 and, increasing after that.
Good. And I guess because Tarek is winning a lot of new logos, and it must have been the breadth is widening, presumably, on the sort of client concentration. It's the concentration is reducing, and you're getting a greater spread of revenue across different verticals as well as corporates, customers, I imagine.
Yeah, so we look at concentration in a number of ways. If you look at the traditional revenue concentration, obviously, it sums up both license, support, and services across all clients. And traditionally, no surprise, it's always the IPM customers that fall into that top five ranking, because it's a combination usually of license plus implementation, which is usually a one-time fee. For these large blue chip clients, as you can imagine, implementation dollars will range anywhere between $500,000 to $1.5 million over a 12 to 18 month period, to get them up and running because they're complex projects, they're large accounts, et cetera. And so that revenue mix, as we add more SaaS type of revenue into the mix, which carries also with it a lot smaller implementation duration and traditional SaaS deployment. So our licensee product, for instance, that we brought into the mix right now is very much focused on the small and medium-sized licensees. So the average ACV of a license is about 20K per year. And we're now able to implement the software in five business days, effectively.
Wow.
And so we're only charging 5K for implementation done all remotely. And we've already tested it with Super 7 that we've taken live on the system. And so we're going to see the mix of the top five revenue continuing to further decrease in terms of an overall percentage of revenue as the SaaS revenues start hitting as well.
And are you selling that licensee software direct, or is that through partners or a bit of both? Because if it's a low value sort of sale, then you don't want your best sort of headhunting sales guys doing all those that business, I guess.
Yeah, so this is our first year selling it. We literally brought it to market at the end of February, early March. And so we've made a conscientious decision to learn as much as we can initially from how to best sell it and deploy it before we sort of also open up the partner channels. There is a longer term play to open up the partner channels. I think the first year, we wanted just to be in a mode of getting all of our learnings right from it, because we've always been focused on an enterprise market size, and now we're selling to the smaller market. Now, the great thing about this is that we've pointed our BDRs to do some campaigns against the licensee targets, and we've gotten some of the best responses we've ever gotten from BDR campaigns. Mm-hmm. We just for this quarter alone, there's over five deals that are active in the sales cycle. And 2 weeks ago, we closed a licensee called Attaboy, which basically licenses from the major licensors. The whole sales process was 3 weeks long. We've never seen something that quick.
Yeah.
Usually our sales processes are between 4 to 6 months once there's a qualified lead on the table, et cetera. And this one front to back with contract signed was 3 weeks. And so there's a lot of really positive movement and demand that we're seeing, and it's very repeatable. So the plan for this year is for us to just button down all the messaging, the go-to-market, the deployments, the references, and then open up the partner channels next year with a lot of also backup references and content and know-how on how to get these things done.
Brilliant.
And just go ahead, Paul.
No, go on, Ian. Go on. It's okay.
Just from a CFO perspective, thinking about this mid-market licensee market that we're targeting, this is really a new target area market for us, a target addressable market for us. There's roughly 3,000 licensees in this mid-market bucket. What we found through years of experience and initial interactions with these potential clients is there's really no one providing this service or targeting this market. Most of these potential clients are operating in Excel spreadsheets. They're regularly getting audited by the big licensors in the industry. There's just a lot of potential in this. And, so a significant expansion of the addressable market that we've previously gone after as a business.
Mm. I mean, you could maybe even, just make it all that integration work where you can almost get some of your big IPM clients to sell that product for you, and that'll make it much easier for them in terms of getting everybody on the same software.
Absolutely. And we're in conversations. We can't share right now, obviously, but we're already in conversations with a major licensor about opening this up to the 3,000 plus licensees.
Fantastic.
So we are thinking of all the different ways of going to market.
Yeah,
also, good. As since you've met us with making sure that we're trying to continue to keep costs contained as we do it.
Yeah.
So looking at partners, looking at existing customers that could help with that. But very, very bullish on it.
Brilliant. And just in terms of the other parts of the commercialization strategy there, Tariq, there's sort of productivity of the sales, because obviously you've got a new team there and a new lot of hires. Yeah. And it's sort of like, how's that progressing?
Yeah. So when we first went out to market, when we IPO'd April of 2023, we had a team of four sales and marketing professionals in the company, US and Europe combined. So you fast forward a year, and that team has grown to 15 people, 15. Effectively, we've gone from a mode of really being reactive and responsive to inbound coming in, inquiry, whether it's RFPs or partner outreaches or direct SEO search outreaches, to having a team that's just dedicated to basically generate leads for the sales reps. And so the progress over a year's point of time, from my perspective, has been outstanding in terms of putting in the right management in place. We've hired a chief revenue officer. We have a senior VP of marketing already in place. We brought in an executive that runs all of our demand generation across all the marketing channels and the BDR outreaches. And then we staffed those roles. We have found throughout this journey of about a year long now, is that it takes anywhere between 4 to 6 months to ramp up a sales hire. You take them through the process of training. We put certification in place around the products, so that, depending on the products we're asking the reps to sell, they go through a full certification process over a 2-month period. And then they start learning all of the tools that we're using, working with their effective BDRs to actually start creating lead generation campaigns. And so once the rep within that, call it 4-month period onward, is up and running, they're generating leads. They're bringing in some opportunities as well from their own network, et cetera. And then depending on the product that they're selling, it could be anywhere from a month or two, if it's on the licensee side, if you will, all the way up to a large blue chip brand vision or IPM customer, is a 6 to 9 month sales cycle. And so it's anywhere in between. So those are the things that we're seeing. We've got some excellent stats. The number of opportunities that we generate on a monthly basis has quadrupled on a month to month basis. Since we started with the IPO till now, we have the value of the license pipeline, which is really our most significant type of revenue, as you can imagine, is the licenses, is up by 43%. The total number of website visits is up by 82% from H2 2023 to H1. The paid search is up 260%. So we're sort of trying to hit it at all different angles, not just the sales and BDR, but also the marketing. We're doing a lot more webinars, we're attending a lot more conferences and events, and then we're looping back all of that back to things like case studies, white papers, and effective webinars. So we're seeing the progress happening. Our new reps have already started closing their deals. And so that's another positive sign, is that we've taken new reps that we've hired, trained. They've gone through a full set of sales cycles and have actually closed deals, which is fantastic. So, from my perspective, the machine is moving, it's working. And we're introducing new product to help fuel also that continued growth. Some of the new product, like licensee, for instance, that we've introduced, has a shorter sales cycle. So it also will be effectively the number of accounts and closes moving forward into the second half of the year that we'll be reporting on later in the year in terms of just net new logo acquisitions.
Good. Well, if Fidel has a similar sort of like I don't know, user conference or developer conference out there in Silicon Valley, then Tarek, then send us an invite, because I'd like to come and kick the tires on the software with all the big customers.
Thank you. That's actually that's another thing that we're looking at doing in 2025 is hosting our own client events.
I think you've got a lot of interest, so I think it'll be well attended. So putting all that together then, Ian, what's sort of the outlook for 2024 then? We've obviously had a good encouraging start, certainly on the SaaS revolution and the pipeline development. How's that going to sort of flow through, do you think, just broadly in terms of sort of top-level development?
Yeah, so Paul, I think the headline here is we are projecting top line revenue in 2024 of $16.25 million. Mm. This is a reduction from our original estimate of $17.6 million at the time of the IPO. The rationale for this is since joining Fidel, I've led a full review of our markets, booking outlook, forecasted revenue together with our investment plan. The wider opportunity in our marketplace has never been greater, and the strength of our year-to-date bookings is ahead of plan. But within that mix, we now expect a higher volume of SaaS revenue going forward versus upfront license revenue, which we generated more historically from our IPM product. We view this really positively in the long term for Fidel. We think the SaaS higher margin businesses that we're focusing on are going to drive higher valuation for the business overall. But it is a short-term reset that we have to go through now on our, as we consider what's realistic for the rest of this year.
Yeah. And I saw on the balance sheet that you talk in the commentary that you've had quite a lot of cash coming in the first quarter as well. Can you just talk through sort of like how the board is sort of viewing that sort of like, the funding and the financing going forward?
Yeah. So, to your point, we had quite a bit of unbilled and billed AR on the balance sheet at the end of 2023, roughly a $3 or $4 million change in our cash flow during 2023. Almost all, I think 90% of that unbilled and billed AR has now converted to cash. So quite a bit of cash have come through the door. We've also recently renewed our Bank of America credit line, which provides us access to $1 million of additional working capital as needed. We're cautiously optimistic that we're gonna end 2024 with around $2 to $2.5 million of cash on the balance sheet. We're targeting a break-even EBITDA for 2025. But I do wanna note that with our pivot to SaaS revenue, we still bill annually upfront on those agreements. So we do anticipate that cash inflows are going to come a bit ahead of the GAAP revenue recognition over the next 18 months as we build up that that revenue line. So we are confident with our current funding, our current working capital to fund us in the short and medium term. But as part of the board, we always consider opportunities for additional investment, whether that's to fund acceleration of our top line or potential acquisitions or for any other need that we identified.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's a good positive position to close. Just finally, Tarek, in terms of the sort of the next trading update, I'm guessing that's going to be probably the first half. Is it sort of the first half trading update in July, or you're doing something at the AGM? Probably not, because it'll be fairly soon. But what's the sort of timeline for investors to get some more news?
We're looking for the first half
effectively
as a trending update. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, big congrats anyway, guys. Great, strong, very good and strong close to last year in H2. A good start to this year with, ARR going up last year at 31%. So a fabulous set of results, and look forward in touching base for the first half trading update in July.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.